pickup over the air, of course, and had the big, you know, it was like a transistor radio, but with a little screen on it, black and white. Remember watching Doctor Who on that? Because, you know, go to bed. No.
Yeah.
Didn't want to go to bed.
It's unrelenting. It's unrelenting. Just when you thought we were going to relent, it's unrelenting.
You know, you should add that theme to the posts on X that you do.
Of all the unrelenting ones?
Yeah, because I think that, like, that little theme, why do companies use theme songs? It's because they work better than the person talking. And you can have, you can still have a hot chick, you know, you just, dancing. She doesn't need to be talking to tell you to listen. You should have the theme instead.
Could work. We could bring more people in. If you stay on the Mighty Know Agenda stream, Adam and Dave, they're going to have some fun today.
Podcast, I bet.
Podcasting 2.0. To send them all your Bitcoin, send us all your Bitcoin. It's going down in value. We will hold it for you.
Yeah, it's basically worthless. You might as well send it to us.
Yeah. I mean, it might seem like you're sending a lot, but it's really not.
No, it's barely anything at all.
Darren O'Neill is the best.
You are listening to the No Agenda stream, where freedom lives and censorship comes to get its ass kicked.
Do your thing.
The music has to come from within you.
Do your thing.
Number, she gotta start at 10.
Kids are less cognitively capable than we were at their age. Since we've been standardizing and measuring cognitive development since the late 1800s, every generation has outperformed their parents. And that's exactly what we want. We want sharper kids. And the reason for this largely has been school. Each generation spends more time in school. We use school to develop our cognition. Congratulations, you see your correlation. Until Gen Z. Gen Z is the first generation in modern history to underperform us on basically every cognitive measure we have, from basic attention to memory to literacy to numeracy to executive functioning to even general IQ, even though they go to more school than we did.
I am so damn tired of being lied to.
Hello, my friend, and thank you for listening to the 339th episode of Congressional Dish. I am your host, Jennifer Briney. And parents, this is an episode for you. Although if you don't have kids, that's fine. This episode is for you too. But mainly for parents, I think this is one that you especially need to hear because we are about to go into a long, hot summer. And while I don't have kids, my husband and I decided not to have them on purpose because living a digital nomad life without a permanent home doesn't sound like a stable environment for a child. So even though I don't have kids, I love kids and I have more experience with kids than a lot of people would think that I do. Because my job in high school, I was a coach for kids in all kinds of sports. I did sports camps. And I got to tell you, my favorite camps were the ones where I taught kids who were between the ages of 3 and 6 how to play basketball, baseball, and soccer, which at those ages meant that I was teaching them how to throw a ball, catch a ball, and kick a ball. And it was so much fun. They were so cute. But the soccer camps paid better. The soccer camps were for kids ages 6 through 13, which is quite a wide gap, but it paid a lot more money. And so I ran those camps too. But in my adult life, I also have 12 nieces and nephews, and my family is a fascinating sociological experiment. Between my siblings and my husband's siblings and my step-siblings, all of them are raising their kids in wildly different environments and with wildly different parenting styles. And then when it comes to rules around screen time, we have the full range on the spectrum. Like we have kids who are Amish level prohibited from using screens, and then we have total screen zombies. And yet we have 12 amazing little humans. We are 12 for 12 in my family. They are all smart. They are excelling in school. They are polite and fun to be around. There isn't a single bad egg in the box, which has proven to me that whatever choices you make around screen time, if your kids are healthy and loved, they're going to be good humans. Parenting is incredibly hard, but it's also incredibly simple. And the judgment that parents have for each other is wild because every style, at least to me, seems to be okay. And so that's the spirit in which I create this episode. No matter what you choose, I do think it's all okay. But we are in a rapidly changing world, and the amount of time that kids are spending on screens is a choice that you are going to have to make this summer while your kids are out of school. Although, as a parent and a community, you also need to be making choices about whether you want those screens in schools in addition to at home. The screens are everywhere now. And in a recent hearing in Congress, I learned that decisions that you are making for your kids about the amount of screen time they're allowed to have are having demonstrable effects on them. And actually, like I said, I don't have kids, but listening to this information made me think pretty hard about my own relationship with screens. But if you are a parent, as we enter summer, when your kids are home and likely to annoy you by constantly being home, I know how tempting it is to hand them a screen so that they'll just shut up for a while. But you should hear this testimony. Again, whatever you choose, no judgment from me. Like I said, the screen zombies in my life are wonderful little humans. But as you make these choices for your young ones, you probably want those choices to at least be informed. And so information on the findings on the effects of screen time on kids is what I'm going to share with you today. But before we get into the testimony from the hearing, I'm having some obsessive thoughts about a topic that we recently covered on We're Not Wrong on the episode that aired on May 28th, and I just need to say my little piece about it. The gist of the story that we were talking about on that other podcast was that it is somehow news in this country that politicians are paying influencers to say nice things about them to their audiences. Now, this isn't news to me. I've been offered large amounts of money to air campaign ads, to do hit pieces on politicians. And because of the business model that we run here, I have turned all of that money down. In case you're unfamiliar, we run on the value for value business model here at Congressional Dish, where I create episodes for you, which are valuable, and you pay me whatever you think is fair. This way, you remain my customer. You are not the product that I'm selling. And I've talked a lot about the advertising model because I think it's a choice that is made by a lot of podcasters without really thinking twice about it. But when a podcaster chooses to make money through ads, essentially what they're doing is they are selling you and your time to companies. They are also selling the trust that they have built with you. For some podcasts, I really don't think that there's an ethical problem with that. So like if you're listening to a comedy podcast or a podcast about fishing and they're selling you different kinds of fishing lines, or if it's a podcast from someone who has written a book and they use some of their time to tell you about their book, like there are ways to ethically run ads. I'm not saying that everyone who runs ads is doing something wrong. But the problem is with a show that's meant to inform and which is doing analysis, I do think it's important that you be able to trust that the opinions and the analyses that you're being given are genuine, that they're genuine beliefs of the person that you trust, as opposed to something that you are being told in return for money. Because an opinion that's being shared with you because it's paid, I believe, is a betrayal of trust, especially if you don't know that they're being paid for it. And that's where I do think that there's a difference between advertising and what is going on with the politicians who are paying influencers. Because unlike with advertising, there are no disclosure laws that are requiring these influencers to tell you that they're being paid. And some of the amounts that these influencers are being paid are eye-popping. That's what we learned in this article that we talked about on We're Not Wrong, which of course I've put in the show notes for you. But what we learned in this article is that billionaire Tom Steyer, who wants to be the governor of California, he's paid $400,000 to an influencer to shill for him. That's the kind of money that we're talking about. And the article had a sentence that I just think sums up what's happening really nicely. It said, quote, "Many large and medium-sized accounts are effectively small businesses selling the followings they cultivated organically to the highest bidder for paid political speech," unquote. And this is why I'm asking you to pay directly for Congressional Dish, because I refuse all money from companies, from politicians, from everyone. That is how you know for sure that when I give you an analysis of a bill or of a world event, it is because I truly believe what I'm saying and not because I'm being paid to say it to you. It's all about trust. And I think this business model is necessary for us to maintain our trust. And I want you to understand the kind of money that is out there for those who are choosing to sell you to the highest bidder. I think it does contribute enormously to the erosion of trust that has happened with media figures in the United States. And I think that erosion of trust is fair. And so every time you donate to Congressional Dish, you're not only helping to keep this podcast going, but also maintaining our relationship based on trust. But you are also helping me to prove that there is another way to share information and that there are financially lucrative options that don't involve turning you into a product. And so thank you again if you have ever donated to Congressional Dish. And if you haven't, now would be a really good time to start. All of the options for how to pay for Congressional Dish are listed in every episode's show notes, which, by the way, exist. How many other podcasters provide every single source that they use for you to make it easy for you to check their work? That's another way that we have built trust here on Congressional Dish. If you consider that valuable, not just for this podcast, but for the world, please pay for this show whatever amount you think is fair. And in return, I will continue to produce these episodes for you. Episodes that make you a better informed citizen, and in the case of this episode, a better informed parent. And so, let's get into it. So all of the testimony that we're going to listen to today was presented on January 15th, 2026 in a Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation hearing that was chaired by Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. Because this is a statistical fact in regards to children in the United States. Here's Senator Ted Cruz.
Children ages 8 to 12 now use screens an average of 5.5 hours each and every day. For teens, it's even higher, at 8 hours and 39 minutes each and every single day.
That's a significant portion of every day. And experts have identified why kids are spending so much time on their screens. Here's Dr. Jenny Radinsky, the Associate Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Michigan Medical School.
We find manipulative designs. 99% of apps that we studied had at least one design that tried to engage kids for longer or monetize their time through ads or purchase pressure, often from characters that they trusted. This contributes to compulsive use and more conflict and difficulty transitioning away from that device when time is up.
Manipulative designs contribute to compulsive use. And we know a part of those designs are algorithms. Here's Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii questioning Dr. Jenny Radetsky.
What does the research show about algorithmic feeds that maximize user engagement, and why are kids uniquely impacted by this?
So a lot of the research has been done by the platforms, so it is not available for external researchers to look at. But there was an interesting convening. So this was published last year by Cunningham, where there were academics and people who worked for platforms who got together to think of how to create better feeds. So they were reviewing the research on how engagement-based feeds compared to, say, a chronologic feed. And so they had all this internal research that they reviewed and cited in this publication, which I can share with your staff, about how engagement-based ranking leads to more time online, right? Which is one thing we're talking about with displacement of healthy behaviors. It also leads to more amplification of emotions. And we know that kids' brains in the teenage years are so sensitive to emotional arousal. So if you had an engagement-based feed, the users of that feed can experience much more intense anger, happiness, and stress. And so that can lead to more compulsive use.
And this was recently backed up in a Surgeon General's report released in May of 2026 by the U.S. Health and Human Services Department. In that report, the experts listed 10 warning signs of compulsive behavior, and I looked at this list to analyze my own behavior. So number one, it says, are you spending too much time on screens or constantly thinking about them? Yeah, I think I am. Number two, are you repeatedly asking to use screens often while whining, crying, or sulking? I think I can say no to that one. Are you using screens to feel better, becoming moody when screen time ends? For me, yeah, I think I do. Are you hiding or lying about their overall screen use? I don't think I am doing this one, but only because I'm embarrassed about my screen use and I have no shame and I will tell people exactly how much time I'm using it. But I think if I had shame, like maybe I would be hiding it. Number five, are you getting defensive when asked about screen use? Again, my lack of shame, no, but I've seen this behavior in others. Number six, are you trying unsuccessfully to reduce your screen time? For me, the part that is stopping me from saying yes is the unsuccessfully part. I have been working on this for a while, so I'm saying no, but there was a time where I was struggling with this. Number seven, are you emotionally withdrawing when screens are not available? Luckily, I can say that's a no for me. But number eight, are you not fulfilling responsibilities because you're prioritizing screen time? Yes, big yes. I spend way too much time scrolling Instagram reels. Number nine, are you not engaging in interperson interactions or activities? This is another one where I think I have to admit that yes, sometimes I am spending so much time just scrolling on my phone that I say no to things that are out in the real world with my friends, and it's something that I regret. And then finally, number 10, are you continuing use despite negative consequences? And that is definitely a yes. And so that was 5 out of 10 for me. And I'm an adult who is very aware of my own compulsive behavior and is actively trying to stop it. And I'm trying to stop it because I can feel the negative effects it's happening on me. And apparently, I'm not alone in experiencing negative effects. There are patterns of harms that are being witnessed and testified to by experts. Here's Dr. Jean Twenge, the professor of psychology at San Diego State University.
Anything that increases the time spent is going to displace time sleeping, time reading a book, exercising, spending time with others in person. So that's going to be the algorithmic feed, for example, notifications, gamification, any of those features that are going to push time spent are absolutely going to be on that list of harm. But there's many others too. You mentioned social comparison of trying to strive to have that perfect body that everybody seems to have on Instagram, that even a lot of adults say, hey, isn't it striking that everybody is always on vacation on Facebook? And it just seems like everyone else's life is so much more glamorous than cyberbullying, body image issues, unknown adults contacting minors. I mean, one of the reasons I became so convinced that smartphones and social media were behind the adolescent mental health crisis is there are so many possible mechanisms.
And so since these harms are now identified and a pattern established, why do the experts think that they continue? Here's Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri questioning Dr. Gene Twenge, the professor of psychology.
Do you believe social media platforms like YouTube and TikTok knowingly design addictive features targeting kids?
I do. That's their business model. The more time people spend on it, the more money they make. So they have poured millions, if not billions, of dollars into those algorithms to make sure people use the app as much as possible. And TikTok in particular, their internal research, they know that that is especially effective with children and young teens because yep. of brain development and impulse control. They have the biggest problem with spending an excessive amount of time.
And Dr. Jenny Radusky, the professor of pediatrics, added to this as well.
So we know that better, more child-centered design exists, but it can't often compete in the marketplace where products are rewarded for their addictiveness and not whether they support youth well-being.
And so not only are the apps that our kids are using addictive, but they are addictive to them on purpose so that adults who know better can make money. And it's kind of wild how these brilliant but ethically compromised app developers have used the warnings about other kinds of addictions, almost like a how-to manual for designing their apps. Because research has been done into the similarities between how the apps are designed and how casinos keep adults on slot machines. So a researcher, a cultural anthropologist named Natasha Dow Scholl at New York University, spent 15 years studying the addictiveness of video slot machines. And she identified four key features that, when combined together, keep people on those machines so that they can keep spending their money. What's wild is that she is noticing these same exact features showing up in social media, gaming, and video streaming platforms. So here's the four. Number one, solitude. She noticed that when it's just you and a machine, there are no social cues that are compelling you to stop using it. And so when you think about a kid who goes to their room with their phone or tablet for hours on end, there's no one there to tell them to stop being a loser and put down the phone. Isolation breeds compulsive use. Number two, bottomlessness. If there's no natural stopping point,
fear's got me living with the lights out, chained down like a prisoner in my own house. Shame cycles like a deadly medication. I try, but I can't change my situation. 'Cause that liar comes to rob my joy. Yeah, I'm bruised, but I'm not destroyed. I'm rising like an army, and you're gonna hear the sound. I'm calling the angels down. I'm storming the gates of hell. Tell the devil he don't own my soul. I'm taking back what the enemy stole. I'm raising the battle cry. I'm holding the banner high. Back what the enemy stole. Oh, you can't speak your lies over my family, no. You can't break the promises that I'm standing on. Ain't got a place to put you back in your place now. One name is all I gotta say. Jesus. I'm calling the angels down. I'm storming the gates of hell. Tell the devil he don't own my soul. The enemy stole.
everything you took from me. In the name of the one who is peace, the one who heals our disease, the only reason that I am free, that tell the devil he don't own my soul. I'm taking back what the enemy
If you're enjoying Focus Live, consider supporting us by tapping the Give button on any of our podcasts or streams.
It's been a long year, it almost took me down, I swear. Life was so good, I'm not so sure we knew what we had. I'll never be the same man, I'll never feel like I felt before. It's been a hard year, it almost took me down. But when my world broke into pieces, you were there faithfully. When I cried out to you, Jesus, you made a way for me. I may never be the same man, but I'm a man who still believes. When I cried out to you, Jesus, you were there faithfully. I've had a hard time finding the blue in the skies above me. And if I'm keeping it real, I've been half faking the happy they see. I may look like the same man, but I'm half the man I was. It's been a hard year, it almost took me down. But when my world broke into pieces, you were there faithfully. When I cried out to you, Jesus, you made a way for me. I may never be the same man, but I'm a man who still believes. When I cried out to you, Jesus, you were there faithfully. In my darkest hour, you me so quietly, so gently. You said you never leave, and you stood by your word. So quietly, so gently, in all my pain you met me. You said you never leave, and you stood by your word. 'Cause when my world broke into pieces, you were there. Jesus, you were there faithfully.
Someone must have been praying for me, 'cause I'm doing better than I ought to be. Sometimes I open my eyes and I can't believe it. Yeah. Someone must have been praying.
West Coast kid in a Chevy S10, everything I own in the back of the bed. Wide eyed dreaming about a Nashville skyline, naive enough to think that it's my time. Singing about pipe dreams, hanging on by a heartstring. 100 doors kept on closing for the one door you blew open, yeah.
Someone must have been praying for me, 'cause I'm
Johnny.
Here we go.
Footsteps.
Hello, hey, hello.
How's it going? Hey. How's it going? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I can hear you. Hello, I can hear you.
So yep. I see left only on clean feed here.
You're
is that what you guys see?
Hold on. I'm
just curious. I don't use it very often. Yeah, do they show you?
No, I got you. I got you on mono.
We're a very liberal podcast. So you're on, always on the left.
You're
always
here this afternoon, folks.
Yes, you're from New Jersey with your new governor. Okay. You can be left channel only.
East Coast, best coast.
What kind of mic are you on, John?
It is a Shure MV7, the USB version.
Oh, interesting. That sounds. I hear some room noise. You're not very close miking, are you?
Let me get up close. How's that? Is that better?
Now you sound like a man.
There we go. Welcome.
Welcome. Welcome.
All it took was a mic to make John sound like a man.
A man. Hold on, let me get rid of this. I hear
heaven speak. Are we on video today?
Please. we on video today. Oh, man.
That's the most I've laughed in a few days.
Hilarious, I tell you. Well, let me get this started here.
No one wants to see that.
No, it's unnecessary.
That's most all of it.
Yeah. Okay, PC20262 project.
Let's see. What am I supposed to be doing?
What are you supposed? What are you supposed to be doing, man? What are you supposed to be doing?
There's no telling.
You got a fan on there or something, Dave?
Me? No, I got nothing.
I hear a lot.
Is it me? That's the room.
Yeah, I hear a lot of background.
It could be me.
No.
I do have the AC on today.
Oh,
I'm muting and it's not changing the room.
No, it's Spurlock. Yeah, sounds like in a submarine.
Here, let me try something.
Yeah, like the off button.
suffer for the show.
Yes. Come on, man. It's not professional.
Professionals sweat.
Amen.
All right, it should turn off in a bit. Yeah, it's actually kind of hot today. It's in the 90s here.
Yeah, we got, I think it's the 90s here too. Let me see. How are you? What's your temperature, Dave? Let's do a temperature check, everybody.
Temp check.
I'm 70.
Temp check is hot.
I got 77, and we got thunder and lightning coming.
Oh, it's in the 80s here.
Super El Nino, which is turning
81. It is 81, which is a lie because it feels like about 90.
This is turning the hill country into the new Napa Valley.
In lovely Birmingham, which I have seen. It's very green, very nice,
very tree filled,
tree oriented.
Hey, right. Here we go.
Room noise check. How's that?
Oh, much better. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Let me hit record here. How you doing, Davey? You ready?
I'm good. Rip it.
Rip it. All right. John, I'll put you on mute, but we'll be back with you very quickly.
Okay.
All right. Rippage will occur.
Podcasting 2.0 for June 5th, 2026, episode 262. Your title here. Everybody, have you been wondering what's going on with podcasting? Well, you came to the right place. This is Podcasting 2.0. It's where we do the board meeting every single week. In fact, we are the only boardroom that never meets in secret. I'm Adam Curry, here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the man who holds all the power of Greystoke. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, Mr. Dave.
Meeting in secret is way too much trouble.
It's cool, man. Time. It's cool. No, it's cool. You got to have Chatham House rules. We have Chatham House rules, everybody.
I don't even know what that means.
Oh, Chatham.
What is Chatham House rules?
Well, you know what Chatham House is?
No.
Chatham House is basically the UK version of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Of course it's British.
Yeah. And so the Chatham House, you know, that's where the liberal world order is decides their rules there. So Chatham House.
The international rules-based order.
Oh, yeah. That's where that all takes place. And then they give the Council on Foreign Relations their marching orders. And somewhere the Bilderberg Group comes in and the Trilateral Commission. But ultimately, Chatham House anything discussed at Chatham House may not be discussed outside of Chatham House. It's a bit like Fight Club, only with nerds.
Chatham nerds House. And old rich people.
Very old rich people and weenies. Yes, exactly. And
it starts at Chatham House, goes to the Council on Foreign Relations, then to Bilderberg, and eventually it winds its way all the way down to the AMP Accords.
The AMP. And you know, it's real. This is how things work in the kingdom, man. So, you know, I have my I love my robot. My robot is
play. That's don't say that.
I love
find a different way to express it.
Well, it's a robot. I mean, it's just a robot. It's not like I didn't say I love my AI or my chatbot. I said I love my robot because my robot.
But when you say I love my robot, it just makes me think of like the movie Her or something.
No. So, my robot is very highly tuned for the boardroom. And you know, it's built all kinds of stringers and agents, and it goes out and so it brings stuff in that's important. It whispers the entire Power podcast, brings me back stuff I need to listen to, tells me the topics, you know, so I can like hang out with my wife while the robot's doing the work. And today it was filled with all kinds of little bits and bobs from you and Spurlock, and like, oh, this is interesting. And so I've been thinking a lot since our last board meeting. Hello, boardroom, by the way. Good to see y'all. And then like 15 minutes ago, you say, oh, yeah, by the way, Spurlock on the show today, which I had missed that email because you always copy me on the invite. That's our system consists of Dave invites somebody and sends out an invite, a calendar invite. And if I catch it, then, you know, oh, yeah, that's right. So I had to send him out a...
Does that qualify as meeting in secret? I don't think it does.
It's not really, no.
Okay, no.
And he's like the perfect guy to round out the trio of the on the show today as we chair the board meeting. Because I'm just full of ideas, man. I got so many good ideas, and I'm so excited to share it with you.
I'm bringing stuff to the table, but if I don't want to, you know, I don't want to throw cold water on your excitement here. So feel free to.
Well, I mean, share. I have a rundown. Why don't we bring Spurlock in? Because he's the kind of guy that he has nothing to promote. You know, he's rich, independently rich. He has a farm or something. I don't know what he's doing. He's got livestock and
Brussels sprouts.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the boardroom the man behind OP3.dev and LiveWire.io from the great state of New Jersey, John Spurlock.
Hey guys, good to be here.
Hey,
always fun to and ready to talk about WWDC next week.
Yeah. Okay, wrong podcast.
That's all I got.
Maybe you can go on the with those Overcast guys. Talk about that there. Liquid glass sucks so bad. There you go. There's your whole podcast. Everybody hates liquid glass. Do you hate liquid glass?
I've actually been out of podcasting for a while. We went on a kind of like a week-long trip, and you know how it is. It's a great time to kind of like declare podcast bankruptcy and you know, live a real life. But then you come back, and then a lot of stuff has happened, and so I've been catching up, and it's very interesting times. Very interesting times that we're living in. But
that's called a pod fast, by the way.
Pod cleanse. I recommend it though. Yes. It is nice. It is nice.
There's a lot of danger in pod fasting because sometimes you find that your life is so much better that you don't resume.
you don't want to go back.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, really? Do you feel that way, Dave? Do you feel that if you stop listening, then and you get back into it, and you feel that your life was better without him?
The total hours of podcasts I consume, if you charted it on a monthly basis for the last 5 years, has steadily declined. Yes, it has been on a downward trajectory, not precipitous, but a very steady downward decline.
Like once every 5 or 6 weeks, I drive to Austin, honestly, to get my hair cut. And It's only because I'm loyal to the girl who's been cutting my hair for 16 years. But man, I love, because I don't drive much. I drive to HEB, you know, like 10 minutes, 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I have an hour and a half each way. And I'm just like, listen to this and listen to that. And then I'm really into it.
I'm listening to way more. I'm listening to way more audiobooks mm-hmm. than podcasts because I don't. Honestly, it's news that I just can't tolerate anymore. I'm tired of the news.
So what you're saying is you don't listen to No Agenda anymore. You just skip it. You're done with it.
I stopped listening to No Agenda like 2 years ago.
No, thank
because for this reason, but for the reason that
I feel special.
The reason I stopped listening was that this may be an interesting story.
Okay.
So the reason I stopped listening was because I didn't want to hear the things you said on No Agenda so that it would then affect the discussion here.
Valid point.
So I would always avoid. So what would happen is I would always avoid the Thursday show of No Agenda.
Oh, okay.
Because I was afraid you'd say something that I wanted it to be fresh when I heard it on Friday. So then that led to, you would say something on Sunday that would bleed through and give me ideas and stuff like that. I'm like, I can't do this. So I stopped listening altogether.
Hmm.
And I was like, I want to be fresh on whatever Adam's thinking process is.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. And that I understand. I mean, I was just telling Pastor Jimmy this morning, it's like, I love doing podcasting 2.0 because it's really board meeting podcasting, blah blah blah. Really, it's just an opportunity for me to catch up with Dave.
That's
really what it is. Like, I just want to catch up with Dave, see what's going on.
Because we used to talk more, you know, like on the phone and stuff like that. And then now, you know, now this is sort of the time I get to talk to you. All the time,
and it would be like, okay, you hang up first. No, you hang up first.
Okay.
Remember those days?
I love you, sweetheart.
Bye. Okay, hang up. Bye. I'm going to hang up now. You. I'm really going to hang up. Yes, here I go.
But the funny thing that happened, though, was that after I stopped listening to No Agenda for that other reason, I now find any sort of podcast that has news in it
is annoying.
Intolerable.
Intolerable. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It is. And it's totally intolerable. Everything is.
It's hard for me to even listen to This Week in Bitcoin. The only reason I listen to it is because I just support Chris and everything he does.
That's still my guaranteed every week go to listen. But I don't think I'd ever miss an episode. There's just something about it that I just like it. You know, he's using a lot of robots too now for his clips. I need to coordinate with him because
y'all should use economies of scale.
Yeah. So, John, what's your go-to podcast, man? What do you never miss?
You know, I was just thinking,
Pod Save America.
I'm into this is because I listen to hundreds.
Goalhanger.
Hundreds. So hundreds. I have so many podcasts that I have subscribed in my little app that I have here.
Oh, that's just, you're just helping the podcast industrial complex with your auto download. I mean, that's not doing anything.
Well, actually, so I'm still using an app that I did a while ago to learn SwiftUI back in the day.
Ah.
And it doesn't auto download anything. So when it comes in, I do an initial swipe, you know, and most I swipe away. Nope, not even. So they're actually getting from me whether or not I actually intend to listen. And once I download, I pretty much do eventually listen to. So very few auto downloads from me, but I actually get this question all the time because you say you work in podcasting and the first question is something like,
is that your pickup line? Hey baby, I work in podcasting.
Hey, I'm big in podcasting. If they say, what are your top three podcasts? And I have no, you know,
everyone
you can't answer something like that.
People ask me that all the time. And another one is, what's your favorite song of all time? What's your favorite music video?
Yeah,
I
don't know. ABBA? Yeah, you should have something ready for that.
I got nothing.
ABBA.
ABBA. Dancing Queen. Come on, man.
I saw a good trick the other day. There was a karaoke thing going on, and someone picked Tequila. And I was like, that's genius.
The Ventures?
The whole time, you're just sitting there watching this person dance, and then they say one word. So this is a perfect karaoke song.
Tequila.
So I need an equivalent of that for podcasts. Like, what's my favorite? Podcasting 2.0, clearly.
Obviously. Yeah, obviously.
Did you get any on you, Dave? I'm going to wipe it off.
That's why we're at the Black Label Society concert. He's like, you know what my favorite city is? Nashville.
Of course.
What city are we in tonight?
At the risk of turning this into this week in AI, I am interested, like, have you done anything, Adam, on the client side of things? Like, do you have your robot go out and sift through your podcast and say, like, hey, just give me the sort of important bits on the listening side? Because I could see that being useful.
No.
Once you start trusting it.
What I did is, and I have other things to talk about, but I will tell you this. There's this site called bingit.io, which redirects to noagenda.clipgenie.com. And Dean, who set that up, he has all the episodes, all the transcripts, all the clips, all the show notes, and he's run some AI stuff robot over it. And it's a search engine. So if you go in there and you search for something, then you can put, then it'll say, okay, here's the relevant No Agenda episodes, and you can listen to, because we publish all the clips. So he has the clips, you can click on the articles, but you can also just in the transcript click on it, and then you hear that part of that show, which is fun because, you know, some of it is like really bad quality, it's 15 years old. So I hooked that into the robot. So I said, look, here's a 5-hour Senate confirmation hearing. Go and find clips in this and measure it against the corpus of everything we've done for the past 18 years. So it'll go back and it'll find things that we said previously. So it gets kind of an idea of the attitude that we had about it. And then it knows what I want from a clip out of it. Mm-hmm. And it'll make a series of 3 to 5 clips. I mean,
not bad. Now that's still on the production side, but anything on the like personal listening side where it's like, there's too many podcasts. I need help. Anything like that?
No.
I think an app would probably be the best helper there.
No, exactly what I said is Pod News Weekly Review. Yeah. I don't always have time to listen to it just because of my schedule when it comes out and then stuff I'm doing Friday morning. So the workflow is find out what's going on, find out what pieces correspond to what I already wanted to talk about or what Dave and Spurlock and whatever's going on No Agenda on podcastindex.social. And then it'll highlight those for me. And then I go into the podcast app and I hit those chapters. So it's kind of doing a couple things for me. So that is indeed on the client side.
Yeah. I've actually been really surprised with how often I use transcripts. And I use them primarily through Apple Podcasts. So like yesterday I was listening to the catching up on the AMP stuff.
Yes.
And I have to say, like, they did put out 2 fairly informative episodes on what they're doing. So,
oh, wait, they have
although their site wasn't great,
wait, they
did,
have a podcast?
They did talk about it.
They have a podcast?
Yeah, they have 2 podcasts. Oh. I subscribe to it.
Oh.
And they did lay it out rather well.
But who is they? Who is
Oxford Road. Oxford Road. Oh, I mean, okay, this is Oxford Road's thing, right?
Well, I've had a lot of thoughts about this, and I'm glad that you took us right there into the AMP thing. So the way I understand it, let's just skip the definition of a podcast for a second, and I will come back to that. So in essence, they have come up with a new measurement guidelines, and the measurement guidelines are pretty simple. I mean, in fact, I feel that they really made a huge mistake by saying, okay, a play is 30 seconds of content played, audio or video, once per user per session. Then the number of unique users who had a podcast play, I'm not quite sure what that means, should have been unique. Anyway, it seems like something wrong with that sentence. An ad impression, a commercial begins playing for the user. These are very specific words. An ad audience, the number of users exposed to an ad impression, which sounds like a guy in a dark alley opening up his coat, like, hey, look at this ad. Are you impressed?
I was exposed.
And I was thinking about this. I mean, let's just talk about that first. What is, because you both, you and Dave, were going back and forth on the Mastodon. What is your initial thoughts about this, about these measurements?
Again, I try to look past the marketing side, which is clearly a marketing side for the Roxbury Road. And if you listen to their podcast, the 12 people that they have on the group are folks that work with Oxford Road, right? And they are ad buyers and networks. And I think there's a guy from Libsyn on there as well. And they had their own summit and they picked 12 people to be part of the secret group. I have no clue why they decided to really go gung-ho on the secret route. Multiple times they're like, oh, we've been doing this in secret. I don't know if they think that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
I think it's
really odd.
Chatham House. It's Chatham House vibe.
It makes,
you know,
it more exclusive or
no,
I don't know.
No. I think it means that we didn't, believe me, I know how Chatham House people think. And these to me are Chatham House people. They're thinking, you know, we did this. We really got together. And, you know, and we were underground and we didn't have any outside influences. And so this was the best way to do it. So we didn't have anyone pushing or pulling at us, which reminds me of the movie by Danny Kaye. I think it is A Song Is Born. I got to look that up. And it's a bunch of professors and they go down in secret for years to write the definitive encyclopedia of music. And as they're ready to publish, they come out and they're, here we are, we're ready to go public with our encyclopedia, and jazz happened. And they completely missed that. And they're like, what is going on? What happened to music?
That's funny.
It's a great movie. And so I think that was well-intended, more as a, we were serious, you know, we put our time into it. That's what I think that is. It too, yeah, is a bit of marketing, but I don't think it's nefarious per se.
And there are three of the members that aren't comfortable with being listed even. So that goes to the, you know, we have to be sensitive as far as a lot of the decision makers aren't in that group. So if a company is signing up to some of these proposals, they may not even be able to make the decision within the company itself.
Yeah.
But I honestly just want to look at it as a, and I think I tried to say this yesterday in the group, is just look at it from what they have proposed. And I'm really allergic to all these, especially,
I'm sorry,
this happens with software
they,
now.
Not proposed, they ratified, let's just be clear.
They have, with no dissenting votes, yeah. But the stuff they've produced, right? Like, what is actually there today? And there's not a lot, and they say as much. And I'm really sick and tired of software companies and pre-announcing things, right? So I will...
Right.
I'll try not to pre-announce things, right? And say, it's coming in 3 months. No, if you have it... You know, there's so much stuff out there. Let's limit the news to like actual news.
Put up a shot.
But I mean, the definitions that they've laid out, I think it's useful as a starting point for discussion. Like, I think what they want is that the players would somehow feel that there's, and this is why I went back into the transcript. I wanted to know their exact language because it's like they used a great word I couldn't remember, but they want to hasten the demand for this idea, right? So they want to get it out in the world and sort of make it more apparent that this is a problem for some people. This is a problem for people that are in the advertising business and podcasting. When they comparatively are using podcasting as a channel in relation to other channels, right? So there's certain things that podcasting can give you, and then there's some metrics that it can't. And so they're hitting these problems. I fully agree. There's probably people that have these problems, and it's just more of a way for them to get it out and into the world and make sure that other people know about it. So it's, in that respect, I don't have a huge problem with it. I do think it's going to be hard. Like, do they have Apple on board with this? Do they have YouTube? Ultimately, they want Apple, YouTube, and Spotify to agree to these numbers or these metrics, and I'm not sure why they would do that now.
Oh man, because that is what always happens in podcasting. When Dave and I started this August of 2020,
Apple's never going to do it.
Never going to do it. If you don't get them on board, it's not going to happen. And then we've been hearing that for 10 years. And now we are 16 years into the Apple. If Apple doesn't do it, and it won't happen, it's not important, blah, 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 blah. And what you see is Apple now does stuff kind of without even asking anybody. And, we'll do HLS video, blah, 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 blah. So it's still just as pathetic as it always was. And on the secret WhatsApp group. Are you in that, John? The WhatsApp group?
I am, yes. I think I know the one you're talking about.
And secret, by the way. The hilarious part is there's a secret WhatsApp group complaining about the secret AMP group. And
nice.
And in the group, it's like, you know, their solution is to yammer about it. Oh, we need to invite more people into the group. And I love this. I hope they never kick me out. I love this group because I am a WhatsApp user because of friends in Europe. And I just, you know, it's on mute. So I just go in and look at it every you know, couple times a day to see what's going on. And it's like, okay, we need to get so-and-so in. Yeah, we got so-and-so in. Well, how come they didn't do that? I'd be like, blah, 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 blah.
I guess this group isn't Chatham House Rules then, huh?
It's totally Chatham House Rules. In fact, listen to this. I think this is from Cridlin explaining the rules. We don't quote from this group, even me. And Apple has threatened to pull my arms and legs off for something I've written on here in the past. So there are eyes here. So there's also spies in the group. I mean, this is...
Oh, that's great. That's great. Nobody has ever asked me to be a part of any of these groups. I've never gotten an invite to them. Do not ever ask me because the answer is no. I hate this crap. I'm completely allergic to all secret groups. Do not even bother. Nothing gets me more irritated than a bunch of secret groups making a bunch of decisions that has zero visibility.
Well, they make no decisions.
Presenting it to the world as if it's somehow legitimate. If I cannot follow the trail of logic that shows how you came to a decision, your decision is completely worthless to me.
It is a very guilty pleasure of mine.
I'm sure it's fun to watch.
I've never been invited to these groups. This is the first one I was actually invited to. There may have been a Slack group at some point that Todd Cochran invited me to. But, you know, I lost Slack a long time ago. I don't know what's going on. But WhatsApp is something I'm still in. Now,
to me, this is like, I want to compare this to... the secret group to the topic being discussed of HTTP signing, which we'll talk about later, in public in the GitHub discussions, and you can see everybody's point of view, and everyone is arguing for their side, everyone and presenting their arguments. It is a completely transparent, above board, open participation discussion.
Yeah, I can't handle those. I can't handle those.
If the goal of the AMP folks was to, and again, it's hard as a tech person to not hear AMP and then hear Google's, I don't know, Dave, if you remember AMP's sort of...
Oh, I content. Spent a lot of time making support for AMP back in the Freedom Controller and on different websites, and then Google rug pulled it.
And no, it's not a thing. But if the goal was to get everyone talking about it, I think they've succeeded, right? Everyone knows who Oxford Road is now. Everyone knows their definitions. And honestly, I think that's a good starting point. Like, if the apps are all trying to not coordinate, they're competing, but if they all want to choose a common definition, at least now they have something to work with. And if people have a problem with it, you know, I'm sure they'll hear about it. So I don't have a huge problem with it. It's once they come out with actual technology and actual sort of ramifications or changes that need to happen to the ecosystem. I don't honestly see that happening. I think this is more of a, hey, we're getting client stats now from Apple and from Spotify and from YouTube, and they're completely different, and we'd like them to be similar. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Now I need to tell you what I've been thinking about. Because, man, I went down a long memory road of how all things came to be. And the first thing I want everyone in the boardroom to understand that we have incredible... We are meek. You know how the meek will inherit the earth? We're meek in the way that... That's not weak. We're meek in the way that we have power that we kind of keep under the hood. You know, like you got a V8, you got a huge blower that you don't see, but then when you step on that thing, it just blah. This is what this group is. And I will remind everybody that when we were told Apple will never do this, Apple will never do that, what happened? Apple did transcripts. Chapters became a thing. The funding tag, person tag, location tag. I know we're on the fringe, but still, we have incredible power just by doing what we do and not writing blogs about it and announcing stuff and meeting in secret. This is the most non-secretive group we've ever had. And we don't give ourselves credit for it. Now, I just need to preface this by saying I have been in the advertising business for a long time. I've been out of it for a long time, but I've been in radio, television, web, podcasting. I built a company. I took it public way too early. Didn't get rich off of it. Did okay. We had $450 million in revenue. I built big websites for Reebok, for Budweiser, for Continental Airlines, for tampons, Tampax, actually, the website you'll visit more than once a month. I did all of these things. I've been on the buy side. I've been on the sell side. At MTV, I brought Budweiser onto the channel, which, make no mistake, was spring break. Was not because we thought it would be cool to do spring break. No, Budweiser. We said, Budweiser, everyone's drinking beer there. We'll make sure it's Budweiser. We'll put big bottles on the stage, and you'll be that. And bring that stupid dog. We'll do the Bud Light thing with Spuds McKenzie. I've done all of that. What I'm going to propose here will piss everybody off except for the advertisers. And will actually have a huge benefit for podcasters. I'm loosely calling it PCDC, the Podcast Data Collective.
Is it a secret?
It's not a secret.
Okay.
Collective. It's a collective. We're a collective. What is podcasting 2.0? It's a bunch of misfits. We do band every week. Someone shows up with a banjo. We got a guy playing spoons, a washboard. We got five drummers,
jug, blowing on the jug.
We got 18 bass players and one guy shredding. You know, it's like we're a very weird group, but statistically, the relevance of the podcast app developers, and this is a crazy situation in all media. It has always been the radio station, the TV station, the website who get the advertising. They get a piece of the advertising, and whether they share that with content producers or not is irrelevant. It's always gone through the transmission stations. Now, in podcasting, that turned out a little bit differently. The hosting companies, who, by the way, are the ones actually making money, who do not support directly any podcast apps. The podcast apps, it's very much like Dave and Adam. We've been doing this for 6 years, haven't put a penny in my pocket. Love doing it for podcasting. Feel that it's important. It's a contribution to the world. And we get enough value for value in so we can keep it going. I don't think there's many app developers, keeping Marco aside, who are really living off of any of this stuff. So there's a discrepancy and a break in the system. And where last week I said, you need to cut us in on the advertising revenue, I've changed my thinking. Statistically, the independent app ecosystem, and John, you'll have to jump in, is probably about, I think we can claim 8 to 10% of overall listening apps. Is that a fair number?
Yeah, that's a good ballpark.
So I'm just going to keep it at 10 to keep it simple. When you have a 10% number in advertising, statistically, that is more than enough to make very informed decisions about your advertising money. If the data collective, if we collectively, just like we did with transcripts, just like we did with chapters, if we all start supporting an aggregation of follows, plays per episode, and completion rate by time, and we publish those per podcast, I mean, you know, initially maybe a top 10 or whatever it is, but we make these numbers available so anybody can, any advertiser can go to podcastindex.org. And I'm saying it should be us because I'm pretty sure people trust us, the app developers. I know they trust Dave. You know, they can trust me as far as they can throw me, probably. But my track record shows I haven't screwed anybody in business. If we publish these would be real numbers. So you can actually see who, if you look at a podcast and go, well, how about this episode? Well, here's how many people listened to it by pressing play. Here's how the percentage of people who made it all the way through or listened to where your ad placement was or whatever reason. There can be many reasons to want to know how long somebody listened. If we publish that initially, publish it and make that available, we will become the de facto, we will become the source of truth. Matthew 5:6 came up for me today. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. I believe in this. I believe that if we publish these numbers from the independent apps, a 10% of the ecosystem, that at a certain point, we collectively can monetize that data. Not by selling ads, but the first customers probably should be the hosting companies. Okay, hosting company, you want to give real stats from 10% of the entire ecosystem, which you can extrapolate to 100% to your customers. Here you go. Data brokers, you want to sell this to the advertisers, to the buying companies, whatever. Now you got to pay for that. And then we divide that as a collective amongst ourselves, prorated perhaps. I haven't even thought about that. But just the opportunity to stick up a big middle finger to all of these secret groups and podcast industry and IAB and all this nonsense that we've known for so long, let's be able to give podcasters at least an actual number of what is really happening with their podcast. We will be hated for this because it's